Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John Murphy, Steve Tasker, hour number two begins. And joining us on the line, ESPN NFL insider Field Yates, the host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You can tweet in your fantasy football questions, and we'll read those for Field as we move through this segment. Field, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on the air today with us. Your early take, I guess, on the Ryan Fitzpatrick news coming out of Miami. What do you think?
You know, guys, there's been a lot of surprise that the Dolphins have elected to go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the thought being, this team is, you know, we use the term tanking, but they are eyeing the future, right? So why would you put Ryan Fitzpatrick under center in place of Josh Rosen, the young developmental quarterback that you traded a second-round pick to Arizona for? Well, I think what this reminds us is that I think it's a lot easier to be a part of the front office when the effort is to, and again, whether you want to call it this or not, I'm just going to use the term to make it simple, tank. It's easier to be the front office and view players in the draft that might help you. When you're the coaching staff that has the game plan and has to be on the sideline during practices and on the sideline during games, and you're trying to go out there and you're competitive in nature, that's all you know, it's what you've been doing for your entire livelihood, if that's what you know, it's really difficult to not want to have the best players available. So while there might be some prudent forward-thinking utility to playing Josh Rosen over Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think Brian Flores feels like, hey, if our goal is to win on Sunday, in the minds of many, that remains the goal, then our best shot is to play Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I agree with you, Field. It's easy enough to try and lose when you're not the guy breaking the wedges.
Listen, we're sitting here and it sounds great. It sounds great in theory. It sounds awesome. It sounds amazing. Tua Tagovailoa, and maybe you draft one of his Alabama wide receiver counterparts. Maybe you draft the best offensive tackle in the draft. The next thing you know, you've got this foundation. But, you know, we're not the ones that are putting 100 hours into their job every single week during the season. And we know how management and ownership can be in the NFL. They can change their mind. What if Brian Flores isn't guaranteed beyond this year? And I'm not saying he shouldn't be or that he won't be, but what if? I mean, we've seen coaches or GMs or even owners have about faces. So I understand the give and take that they're dealing with right now in Miami.
I also wanted to make it a move. Does it change that much for the Dolphins? Obviously, Ryan Fitzpatrick has some experience. I mean, from the outside looking in, what's it really change?
I think it makes them a slightly more competitive operation. Not a major upgrade, obviously. If it was a major, clear, decided upgrade, then Ryan Fitzpatrick would not have been benched in the first place. Ryan Fitzpatrick, very familiar to Bills fans, obviously. He's got an electricity about him. He is the definition of a streaky quarterback. At his best, Ryan Fitzpatrick can throw for 400 yards and guide comebacks and, you know, curry Fitzmagic. As we saw last year, right? I mean, the beginning of the season, Fitzmagic was the theme of the NFL. He is also mistake-prone. Turnovers have been an issue for him at several junctures of his career. And, you know, I think the Bills' defense has shown when you give them opportunities to make mistakes for you or force mistakes, they're going to take those opportunities. So it would not surprise me if on Sunday, whether it's Micah Hyde or Tre'Davious White or anybody else on that Bills defense ends up with the football in his hands with an opportunity to take it back a long ways for potential score.
Field, Steve and I were talking in the first hour of our show about quarterback aside, we both kind of dove into the Dolphins video over the last 24 hours. And I have to say, it shocked me how bad they were, how talent bereft they are, and just the way they play. They don't seem like a real NFL team, the Miami Dolphins, right now.
It's unlike something we've seen in quite a while. Now, part of it is because they've traded away Laremy Tunsil, Kenny Stills, obviously Minkah Fitzpatrick, amongst other players. And I'm not sure they're done. You know, the trade deadline's now 13 days away, but they don't have a lot of valuable commodities left over. They were not aggressive at all in free agency, and that makes sense, right? Why bother getting after free agency when, you know, the plan is, again, from a front office standpoint, the plan is clear. It is to put ourselves in competitive situations going forward. Over the past couple of years, the Dolphins have in some ways, from a win-loss record, slightly overachieved. They had a crazy random run to the playoffs a couple of seasons ago with Adam Gase as the head coach. I think a lot of that was more circumstance than talent. And you're right. I mean, it's a tough watch. And I get it. I actually have belief in the pieces in place at both general manager and head coach. It never got anywhere close to this in Buffalo, but one thing that the Bills, I really do believe, should be a formula to other teams around the NFL is that you need to have a process, you need to have a plan, you need to have the people in place to execute that plan, and you need to either go with that plan or not start it at all. Again, never was it as bad in Buffalo as it is now. But as you guys know, I mean, part of last year, after making the playoffs the year before, the Bills was, hey, it might have to get a little bit better, a little bit worse before it gets better. And we're seeing the payoff right now with the Bills at 4-1. And to me, you know, very close to, and I know lock is a strong word, but I think the Bills are playing in January. I think they're making the playoffs, and I think it's not a surprise given the plan they had in place and their willingness to stick with that plan.
One of the things I asked you about, I want to ask you about too, is that the fact that how public it seems to be this tank in Miami is, it's so much prevalent in the conversation that Roger Goodell was asked about it today in his post league meetings in Miami. Is there a way, or can you see something on the horizon that would deter teams from having this plan and carrying it out?
My guess is no, and the reason why is this is about as extreme of an example as we've had, maybe ever. Beyond that, it's one thing if we have evidence that this works. It's another thing if it doesn't work. And when I say doesn't work, it's sort of a subjective description because, you know, a lot of people are trying to equate this to what the Philadelphia 76ers did in basketball. You know, the question will be like, you know, was it all worth it? And yeah, they look to be a team that has a chance to be very competitive this year. But again, there's a lot of misery. 3 straight years of absolutely dismal basketball. I don't know that there are a lot of teams that either A, are going to have the patience, or B, have the willingness to do what the Dolphins have done. Not necessarily saying that this is a perfect plan or that what they're doing makes sense for everybody or is a foolproof idea. But I also know that it's not something that everybody would do. A lot of franchises would say, we're definitely not going to sacrifice as much as they are in the short term. Because it's not just losses. It's, hey, we've got fans that are unhappy. We're having a hard time selling tickets. We're having stadiums that include more of our opposing fans than they do our own fans on Sundays. And that can be embarrassing. It can be humbling. It can be really difficult to see.
With Field Yates, he is ESPN's NFL insider on the line with us as we talk about the NFL and the Buffalo Bills. You mentioned the trade deadline is 13 days away. We asked this question on our show yesterday, Field. Do the Bills need to make a trade before the trade deadline? And if so, for what?
I don't know that they need to. The problem is there is not – like so the trade market tends to take shape in two ways. One, the completely obvious – trade candidates like Jalen Ramsey because he made it public. He demanded a trade. He requested a trade, I should more accurately say. Which I guess you can kind of debate whether there's even a difference between demanding a trade and requesting a trade. But they have Jalen Ramsey is now gone. In terms of other players that like clearly want out, I'm not so sure who those are at this point. And so the second way that the trade market materializes is the more common one, which is that, you know, teams are talking to each other throughout the weeks leading up to the trade deadline, and they have information that much of which will never become public about which players may become available. Certainly familiarity helps. We know the Bills have been active in trades with the Panthers amongst other teams in the past. But, you know, at this point of the Brandon Bean tenure, you know, clearly he's done enough business with everybody that I think that if there is a player available, it fits a need. And for the Bills right now, I'm not sure what the most most pressing, obvious need would be, that also is at a position where there are a lot of players available.
Well, I was going to ask you about one of the major trades that came down the pipe. Not only did Marcus Peters get traded from L.A., the Rams, to Baltimore, then, and it looked like I couldn't understand what the Rams were doing to try and get better, and then all of a sudden the next day they bring in Jalen Ramsey from Jacksonville. This was all set in place before either one of those trades obviously took place, because the Rams are really – they're all in. They've got they have no number one draft picks for 5 years. I mean, they're trying to win right now.
They're the anti-tankers.
Yeah, they're the anti-tankers. Yeah. They're pushing their chips to the table.
All in. They're all in. And you know, I try not to make too many cross-sport analogies, but sometimes they can be pertinent. And you know, sometimes you see in the NBA, teams basically trade for cap space, right? They move off of a player who has a big salary due to him, whether in his five.
No, I lost him.
Did we lose him?
Lost the internet there trying to and he was talking about salary cap reasons for these trades. Jalen Ramsey, they have not signed Jalen Ramsey to a long-term deal, and he's going to be due a long-term deal.
Jay?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Hi. You're talking about cap reasons for that trade,
trading for cap reasons. Go ahead, Field.
Yeah, what I was going to say, guys, is that in the NBA, we see trades where it's like you trade for cap space. It gives you financial flexibility going forward. In the NFL, we had one of those yesterday. The Rams traded away Marcus Peters because they needed to clear the resources to acquire Jalen Ramsey. And potentially some other pieces, too. They traded for not just Jalen Ramsey yesterday, but also Austin Corbett from the Cleveland Browns. What a fall from grace that has been from Corbett. Corbett was the 33rd pick in the draft last year. More importantly on Ramsey, it was one of those where you felt like there was a second shoe to drop. You just didn't know what that second shoe to drop was right away, and then it became crystal clear just a matter of hours later. And for the Rams, as you guys were saying, they're all in. And you can question whether the right play is to be all in, whether it's to be in constantly using your own first-round picks you can draft and develop or what have you. But the Rams have sort of planted their flag. They believe in their core. They believe that this core is good enough to compete now and that they can sort of do the window dressing on the roster. And what that's going to require is a lot of bargain shopping, because you've got Aaron Donald, Jared Goff, presumably Jalen Ramsey will get an extension at the very top of the market, Brandon Cooks, Todd Gurley, you've got major investments along the offensive line, Rob Havenstein, Michael Brockers on defense. There are a lot of guys that are making a lot of money right now in Los Angeles, and I know that there are great values across the NFL because there are 53 players on each roster. But it's not as easy as just snapping your fingers or using a seventh-round pick on a guy and hoping for the best.
Field Yates from ESPN on the line with us. I want to jump around the league a little bit, Field, before we get to some of the fantasy questions. The Titans decide to go with Ryan Tannehill. Does that mean the end of Marcus Mariota in Tennessee?
I don't view it as necessarily the end for this year, because like Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill only has 1 year left on his contract. So it wouldn't stun me if this is a let's put Ryan Tannehill in. Let's hope it gives us a bit of a jolt to the system. But if it doesn't, and he is, you know, on par with Marcus Mariota or even inferior, well, then the opportunity to go back to Marcus Mariota always remains. You're not trying to develop Ryan Tannehill. Whereas in Miami, if you play Josh Rosen, even if it's not as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's, hey, we're developing a 22-year-old player for the future. Ryan Tannehill was drafted before Marcus Mariota, by several years, actually. So he's got the decided age edge, and I think the feeling is that he is just a better fit for them right now. If it proves not to be, you go right back to the well, and you have Marcus Mariota waiting in the wings. And I'll say this, not every quarterback is fit to handle actually sort of the humble pie that is dealt when you get moved from a starting quarterback to a backup job. Be interesting to see how Marcus Mariota explains or how he handles it. And I think, you know something, he will be just fine.
Yeah, I want to ask you about one other quarterback who entered the lineup last week as the New York Jets, Sam Darnold. What a difference he made. They looked like a completely different team, beat a Dallas Cowboys team, and Darnold looked good doing it. Is it soon enough for him to save their season?
Saving the season, probably not, because assuming that means for them to like make the playoffs, they do have a much more favorable schedule from weeks 9 to 14, but they play the Patriots on Monday night. And they still play the Bills one more time, obviously. They're going to be more competitive. And I think the important part is, you know, for the Jets, this season looked lost 2 weeks ago. It now does not at all. Beyond that, there were already people that were wondering about the direction under Adam Gase, which, you know, is a little bit crazy after just four games, but that's kind of how the world works in the NFL. But it's a developmental year for for Sam Darnold, in the same way that I thought last year was a developmental year for Josh Allen. We knew it wasn't going to be perfect, but it was important for him to get those reps. So even if Sam Darnold doesn't make this team playoff relevant right now, if they can, like, if they have start 0-4 and they finish 6-10, that actually feel pretty good to go 6-6 over those last 12 games.
I want to ask you about another young quarterback. And I was thinking back the other day about Sunday. I watched the end of the Arizona-Atlanta game, thinking about a weeknight game in mid-August when Kyler Murray couldn't even take a snap without getting called for a penalty. And look how far he's come. And he's had, you know, the Cardinals have won a couple in a row. I would think that they feel pretty good about what's going on out there with the Cardinals right now, with him in particular.
Yeah, I'd say so. Pretty impressed by Kyler Murray. Hard not to be. Makes some wow throws every game, as you're seeing actually right here on the video is one of them. He has been better in terms of not making mistakes, specifically the turnovers. He's running the football more, which there's a balance that coaches have with running the football. Part of it is that he's a decided edge and difference maker. You know, he's incredibly difficult to tie down in the open field. On the other hand, you don't want your quarterback taking a ton of hits. So I think they've done a nice job of weaving in the rushing for Kyler Murray. Also, he is still a passer at heart. If you combine passing attempts and rushing attempts per game, he is by far the NFL leader right now. I've been pretty impressed. I'm encouraged there. I think they have a good chance to win this game on Sunday against the New York Giants.
Yeah, it's been an interesting development. It happened very quickly. Now it's the offense is as much fun as we thought it might be to watch there in Arizona, and it's going to be fun to see if it continues to develop. I had to want to ask you one thing about the topic of the week, which has been the officiating. Rich McKay, who's the chairman of the competition committee, he says it's too early to judge if the pass interference rule review process is good or bad. I don't know that I agree with him. What's your thoughts about the coach's challenge to a call, non-call pass interference?
I don't think it's working. And I think coaches are going to give up on it soon, to be honest with you. I think there's something like one for their last 22 and having these plays overturned. What we had last year in the NFC Championship game was obviously really bad, and there was no room for it. But just making pass interference penalties reviewable was not going to fix everything. It sort of feels like during the off season, sometimes we have this almost like Pollyanna type mentality, right? Like everything's going to be fine. We'll figure this out. This will solve everything. It's not. As a matter of fact, I think they might just move that rule, remove it entirely. One thing I will say, though, about the officiating, and this is the most important point I think I can make about it right now, is that the NFL, I really believe, needs to show accountability and admit error when they have plays that were miscalled on the field. It can't just be that Al Riveron tells us why controversial calls that the refs got right were correct. And I get it. It doesn't change the outcome of what happened on Monday night, where there were two really bad penalties called that did not work in Detroit's favor. But here's what happens is the three of us can say whatever we want. We can go to Twitter. We can do it on this show. We can do it wherever and howl to the moon about penalties. But if something does not work in the favor of the Buffalo Bills, there's an egregious call that goes against them. Sean McDermott has basically no recourse. If he says something, you know what happens? He gets fined. It's just, that's just not fair.
Yeah.
If there's an obvious replay error, if there's an obvious non-call on the field, and somebody for an NFL team says something, they're going to get fined a lot of money. It's not insignificant the amount of money they can be fined for questioning or calling out the refs. So by the refs coming out and admitting error or admitting guilt, again, it is not changing the outcomes of games. But what I think it does is it provides a bit of accountability. It builds some trust between teams, and it's a tiny shred of acceptance that teams can take, because sometimes you just want to hear that what you want to say is correct, even though you can't say it.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, with us. Field, before we get to the fantasy questions, one more question for you. And the commissioner just finished talking at the league meetings in Florida, talking about how optimistic he is about a new CBA maybe being signed soon. By any account, that's good news. And I think it's surprising news, don't you?
I do, yeah. We've heard a lot of positive buzz about the CBA being done before the next deal or this deal is set to expire. We've seen this before. I think what we know is that until negotiation is done, I'm going to sort of hold my breath a little bit.
Yeah.
So while I am excited to hear that there's some optimism, I'm not trying to be, you know, the wet blanket here. I'm just trying to caution people that these are very difficult and nuanced negotiations, and that we have learned in the past, like, you know, just because something is close, what's the old expression? Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
Right.
I haven't heard that
That's
in a
right.
long time.
That's right. Yeah. And I agree with you, because it won't get done until it's signed. And it'll be interesting to see It'll be interesting to see what both sides put as their top priority as to yes, no, and then the after conversation of what they left on the table, what they didn't get on the table, and there's obviously going to be snap judgments about who won, who lost. But I think I can't wait to see what this looks like, because there's some pretty cool stuff on the table on both sides of the issues.
Yeah, I would love to see this. We'd all love to see get something. We'd love to see something get done for a lot of reasons. We all love football. We want these players to continue to be very well compensated for what they do. There are some ironing that needs to take place of details, ironing out, I should say, of details. Hopefully, you know, this is my naive take, but what I always want in the CBA negotiations is not everything has to be tit for tat. If there are areas where, you know, it clearly is a benefit to the player, it doesn't mean the owners have to get something in return, which is naive. I understand that. But if it's clearly a benefit for the players and good for the game at large, whether that's like, you know, the abolishment of Thursday night football, then I hope it's less of a negotiation and more of just a concession.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, the host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. We have a couple of fantasy football questions to wind up with here with you, Field, if you got a minute. From Jack,
yep.
He tweets us in, Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, and for a flex, Tyler Boyd or Austin Eckler?
Certainly understand the optimism around Josh Allen. I will go with Patrick Mahomes, though. That's as simple as, hey, he's Patrick Mahomes. You always play him, right? And then the second part for the flex, I like Tyler Boyd, who's coming off of yet another productive game. Been a good player, one of the few good players for the Bengals this season.
All right, next question also has Austin Eckler in it. Is it Austin Eckler's a flex position or Darren Waller?
Ooh, good question right there. I'll go with Darren Waller. An excellent season so far for the Raiders. One of the most productive tight ends already with 37 catches.
From Ronnie, which three are the best options going forward? Terry McLaurin, John Brown, A.J. Green, D.D. Westbrook, and Robbie Anderson. Which three?
Let's make it simple. The three that are healthy, McLaurin and also Robbie Anderson. And then the second one that I
John Brown.
I heard it. And John Brown.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, well, last for me, from Sean, he says, Field, any news on Gurley or Malcolm Brown? If Gurley is out and Brown is fine with the ankle, do you run Brown or Henderson?
I would go with Malcolm Brown if Todd Gurley sits again on Sunday, though it sounds like there's a pretty good chance that Gurley will play. Injury reports should be out in about 6 hours, which would be 4:30 local time in Buffalo, just not – you know, West Coast teams don't submit them until the afternoon, so we'll have more clarity there. The good news is you've got plenty of time, so you got to line up on Sunday.
One more for you, Field, from Henry. Simple one. Start Jared Goff or Gardner Minshew?
Hey, crazy we're getting to this point. I would go with Jared Goff. The Falcons' defense, guys, is just atrocious right now. They can't figure out what they, you know, left from right. Second worst scoring defense in football. Jared Goff has struggled of late. But trust the matchup here and go with Goff.
All right, last one from Corey. He says, who has the better outlook for the rest of the season? Is it A.J. Brown or Tyrell Williams?
Ooh, good question there. I would go with Tyrell Williams. A.J. Brown, I really like the talent and the player, but he's not even a full-time player for Tennessee. And part of the reason why they just made a quarterback change is because their passing offense hasn't been very good. So go with Tyrell Williams, who hopefully returns to the field in the next week or two.
Field, thanks for all of this. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right, guys. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Field.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, the host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, answering your fantasy football questions, talking about the Bills, talking about the NFL. He covered the waterfront. He did everything for us there. We can just shut off the lights and go home. Nothing more. No, we got a lot more to come.
Including a lot more.
John Feliciano is going to join us when practice wraps up. That should be sometime in the next half hour, 45 minutes or so. And a lot more to talk about with Ryan Fitzpatrick going to start at quarterback for the Dolphins against the Bills. What do you think of that? We'll take your phone calls on it. We'll read your tweets on it. And we'll come back with more. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. Live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. John Feliciano is going to join us when practice ends. Practice should end in the next 5 minutes or so. And as soon as Feliciano is ready, we'll get him in here in the studio. Lots to talk about today. We're going to hear from the commissioner in a moment, speaking at the meetings in Florida. Got a caller on the line, though. Walt in Buffalo on the line with us. Walt. Are you there? Hang on, Walt. Stand by. I got to make one quick switch here. Now I got you, Walt. Or I don't.
Hey, John.
Hey, Walt.
There
how you
doing?
Go.
How's it going, guys?
Good. Thank you, Walt.
Hey, so I just wanted to call. I wanted to talk about wide receiver number one with the trade deadline coming up here. First things first, I don't want to talk about A.J. Green or Stephon Diggs. I'm thinking more of a perennial franchise-type wide receiver.
Like John Brown, maybe?
What's that?
John Brown's not wide receiver number one?
I think John Brown is a fantastic 1B two-way receiver. I'm thinking more or less like a Mike Evans or a Julio Jones. Now, my basis on this is I think Brandon Bean has done a fantastic job drafting, cutting bad contracts. You look at our defense for next year. Only two guys are not signed. Lorenzo Alexander and Jordan Phillips. So, barring unfortunate events, you know, we've got all our defense is coming back. So you look around the league and, you know, Tampa Bay, they've got their problems with Jameis Winston. Julio Jones on the Atlanta Falcons, they've got their problems. You know, Dan Quinn, who knows if he's coming back or not. So both those guys just signed new contracts, and with Brandon Bean giving us close to $90 million in cap space for next year, you know, I would be okay with giving up a first-round draft pick for one of those guys and maybe throwing something else extra on there. I just think we've got Josh Allen on his rookie deal. Like I said, both those guys just signed new deals, so they're locked up for 3 or 4 years. I'll hang up.
Yeah, you've given us
here's the
thought,
thing, and I get you, Walt. Here's what happened. Here's what I see with Julio Jones. Throughout the entire negotiating process, before it even started, Julio Jones said, I want to retire an Atlanta Falcon. And the owner of the Falcons, whose name's escaping me right now, Arthur Blank said, we're going to make sure it happens. Julio Jones did not hold out. He did not stop practicing. He practiced the entire preseason, the entire training camp. Julio Jones was on the field practicing, and he took the owner's word, Arthur Blank's word, that they were going to get it done, and they did, because they want him to retire an Atlanta Falcon. So if you tell me all that happened so that Julio Jones can retire an Atlanta Falcon and they're going to trade him 2 months later, I just don't see it happening for any price. I don't think Arthur Blank will allow Julio Jones to ever wear any other uniform than an Atlanta Falcon uniform. Now, if you can get him at the right price, I don't have a problem with it. He's the absolute most dominant physical wide receiver in the National Football League. He'd be great. He'd be a great addition. You'd be better with him than without him. I'm all for him. I just don't think it's a possibility that's in that is on the table for anybody, any team, including the Buffalo Bills.
Hey, we talked about this with Field Yates a moment ago. The owners' meetings wrapping up in Fort Lauderdale. Roger Goodell expressing optimism about how the current CBA negotiations are going. Hopefully, he said, we'll see all the benefits doing something earlier, getting something done, the commissioner said. So that's good news. There was a lot of talk about officiating there as well. They had Alberto Riveron at the owners' meetings in Florida yesterday. And moments ago, Goodell talked about officiating and all the concerns that have come up in recent days or weeks about NFL officiating. Here's what the commissioner said today about the state of NFL officiating.
Well, officiating is always a focus for us. And I joke, but I'm not joking. I think I'm close to 40 years, and I think there's always a 2 or 3 week period where there's an intense focus on it. But listen, you never want to see a game where people are talking about officials afterwards. It was a great football game played by two great teams that are really, I think, surprising a lot of people about the quality of the way they're playing. And it's tough. It's tough to be in that situation. So we have to continue to do everything to improve officiating. You know, Al and his team and Troy and everyone, we're all focusing on how do we continue to prepare our officials, obviously using technology when we can, but that's sports. You see it in every sport.
Commissioner kind of walks away from it. You know, he said something that you mentioned the other day about a 2 or 3 week period where people focus on officiating. You know why? Because the officiating stinks for a couple of weeks in a row, and then people get distracted by something else. The season moves along, teams get good, teams fall by the wayside. Why is it that – and, by the way, they change how they officiate, too, when there's a lot of pushback. I think they're going to change. What's his name said it yesterday, Mike Pereira, right, about holding. The first couple of weeks, there was 64% uptick in holding calls, and then they said, oh, we can't call that many holding calls.
Now they're not calling any.
Yeah.
And it's also true as well that – and I said this when we yesterday when we came out, when all these problems came out about the Monday night game yesterday on Tuesday when we were talking about how that game came down. There's always a stretch where you're going to get plays where times where people talk about it for a couple of weeks. And I get it.
Because it's bad. That's why they're talking about it.
It's no different than it was before replay either. They talked about it before replay. There was just no recourse. Now I think – it's almost the point where you're almost more upset about it because they have replay and they still mess it up. They still can't fix it. And the problem is this. Yeah, okay, you could go back and dissect every single play and allow for some adjustment period where now every single ticky-tack pass interference call is going to be made. The game would never be played. It'd take a day and a half to play one game because every play would get dissected. You have to go back and say, well, on the play away from the ball, there was a holding call or something like that. So there's the other end of the extreme. The simple fact of the matter is you got to find a balance as to what you can live with, calls and non-calls, and getting it right fast so we don't have to sit there for 6 hours and watch these guys on camera with these little earpieces wearing striped shirts saying, hey, what'd you see? What'd I see? What's that? What's the rule say? What are we going to do? What's New York have to say about it? All right, let's wait. Let's talk about it a little more. And then finally get out and say, hey, the call stands. Oh, my gosh. You know, just, you know, give me the asteroid, right? You know, I mean, I don't just end it now. We can't live like that. And the problem is, like you said, Murph, It's no different now. In fact, it's worse now than it was before replay. Because in replay, you just knew, well, there's no way to go back and look at it.
Right.
And
call was made. Call was wrong. Let's keep playing.
You got to live with it. Sorry, bro.
The other thing, and I think a lot of it's the attention's been focused on the new rule in place this year, 1 year a trial period for the use of replay challenges on pass interference, offensive and defensive. And the numbers are pretty startling. 38 challenges on pass interference calls so far this season around the league. Only four of 38 have been overturned following review. It's become pretty obvious that the officials do not want to change, no matter what the challenge is, they do not want to change their pass interference call on the field. They're looking for clear and obvious evidence, and they claim that they don't see it. They don't want to change it. They don't want to change
those rules. Well, they're doing what they're told. I mean, Al Riveron's doing what he's told in that regard. They don't want to, and I don't know why. And it's going to be interesting to see how big a fight there is after this season about, listen, if you put the rule in, if you do it the way we're asking you to do it, it'll be better. But let's face it, if you challenge pass interference on 38 of those calls, 30 plus of them are going to be pass interference.
Yep.
They're gonna be, because of by the letter of the rule, you can't touch the guy or hinder him from making the catch. That's their job, you know. So you're gonna overturn all of them, and you know what that happens then? Then they get their challenge back, and they're gonna do it again.
It'll never end. Rich McKay of the Falcons is the chairman of the competition committee. He talked about this late yesterday at the league meetings in Florida, and basically he said it's only 6 weeks. Is the challenge process working on pass interference? Rich McKay says it's too early to tell. Here's what he said.
I don't think, Ian, that we would give them a summation on whether a rule that's been in place for 6 weeks is working or not working. Let's let the season play out. Just like in use of helmet last year, we waited till it was a new rule. We waited to the end of the year. We went back and examined all of it. We definitely looked at the officiating of it. We looked at the teaching of it. And I think we've gotten ourselves in a pretty good place. This is a brand new rule. One that our coaches are getting accustomed to, one that our players and fans are getting accustomed to, and one that the officials are getting accustomed to. So I don't think for us we did it that way. We gave them the numbers. We showed them plays. But I think we're going to reserve, and at least I always have thought it's way better to reserve judgment until the season's over. You've seen the full season, and you've got an opportunity to look at all the tape, which is what we traditionally do.
I get that. But what McKay's really saying is the fans, the players, coaches are getting used to it, meaning they're getting used to the fact that we're not going to overturn these calls. This is the way we're going to call it, which is not good. Why have the rule? Here's what will happen.
Exactly.
It's a one-year trial. It'll be thrown out. And if it's not thrown out, if Sean Payton and his cabal of other coaches have another springtime league meeting where they say, we need to affirm that rule, make it a permanent rule, that's a mistake. It's not working. Right? 4 of 38 have been overturned. It's not working. But yet, you know, this was a coach's move. The coaches kind of strong-armed the league into changing to putting replay in place on pass interference, and it's not working.
I can't believe the league caved like that. Like, I've said it from the very beginning. I feel for the Saints fans. I really do.
Yeah, it's
a horrible thing. But get in line.
Yeah.
Everybody's had that happen to them. Everybody's been stabbed in the back by a bad call or a non-call. Everybody. And Murph, at every level of football.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Pro, college, semi-pro, high school, yeah. XFL, NFL, USFL, AAFL, Pony League, youth football, every single guy, every single team. So get in line. I feel for them, but you're not special.
Well, Sean Payton and the Saints convinced other coaches, including the Bills coach, that this would be a good thing. McDermott was asked about it today and would not comment. Did you catch that this morning? Would not comment.
He knows.
The
writing's on the wall.
There's no upside.
The writing's on the wall. They've completely botched the implementation of the rule, so you really don't know if it would work or not because they're not, you know what I mean?
They're not calling it.
Right, they're not using it. If they would do it the way they, to the letter of the rule, maybe the coaches would come to them and say, you know what, we got to get rid of that. You know? The game's taking 4 hours, we can't do it. They don't even know if it'll work.
6 games in, they're ready to wait, as they should, for the end of the year. Got a call on the line from Tom in Lakeview. Hello, Tom, welcome, go ahead.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
Steve, Hall of Famer, going to get there someday, buddy. But I got a question about the referees with the NFL having a program of ex-players becoming referees. Is that something that's a possibility? Is it something the referees might be looking into? Or are we just going to keep these guys that have regular day jobs and then are referees on the weekends?
Well, I think more importantly, forget about former players, Tom. I think you want full-time, all-time refs, guys who didn't play, who only ref. It's a better mindset. To have. And I think the better way to go, if I know you didn't ask me, but I think they should just keep more and more and more of the officials that work the NFL become full-time guys. This is their only job. I think there's like 24 guys now who are full-time guys on the field. That's all they do. And that number is growing. So sooner or later, they'll all be full-time. But I think that's the better way to go. It doesn't really matter the background of the guy, whether the guy sells cars or whether he's a former athlete. I think it matters how much experience they've got and that they have an ingrained mindset as to not caring about one player or the other, but playing about the rules and who's right and who's wrong. I think that's the mindset you got to look for, and players inherently are just the opposite of that. So I don't know that having former players is a better answer than making all these guys full-time only officials. So I know that there are some former players that are officials in the league, but for the most part, I think it'd be better if they were just all full-time and rather than part-time.
We're going to take a break, and John Feliciano is going to be with us soon. Stick around for that. We got a lot more to talk about, including the Dolphins' move to start Ryan Fitzpatrick Sunday here in Buffalo. We'll talk about that some more when we come back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino, nothing comes close.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our studio, the Seneca studio. Practice is over, and we get our guest, John Feliciano, Bills guard, joins us in studio. How does it come that you signed here, in March, and this is your first appearance on our show? What the heck have we been doing?
You're dodging us, man.
It's your fault.
It is our fault. We thank you for coming by here. Tell me about you spent the first 4 years of your career with Oakland, now mm-hmm. here in Buffalo. How's that transition gone for you so far, John?
It's been great, man. My family loves Buffalo. I love Buffalo. First 4 years was in Oakland. A lot different experience than here. Had a few good guys in front of me, three Pro Bowlers, and this season's been different being out there, and I've been loving it.
You knew that when you came here, they were going to totally revamp the offensive line. Mm-hmm. They struggled last year. The only holdover is Deion. Mm-hmm. You knew you were going to have a real shot to play. And I was reading some of your bio, and Chris Brown did a nice article on you a couple months mm-hmm. ago. That was really important to you. You want to get on the field.
Yeah, man. It was hard. For those 3 years, last 3 years of sitting and watching, so going into free agency, I just wanted a place to be able to come in and try to compete and try to get the starting job. And as soon as Buffalo became an option, it kind of moved quickly. It was like, we're gonna go to Buffalo.
What did you like when you were kind of being recruited here? What made you think this could be the place?
Just the blue collar atmosphere. I knew I'd fit in with the people of Buffalo and the team we're trying to build here, and Bobby Johnson. I just knew that I would get a fair shot, and that's all I wanted.
He was your coach in Oakland.
He was the tight ends coach in Oakland. I spent 3 years with him, and him not being my coach kind of, I think, helped just to be able to, when he's not your coach, he's just almost another guy, So I was able to build a friendship with him, and I mean, he used to help me out with goal line plays and get me in. So I always loved him for that.
One of the strange dynamics, and I talked about it just for a minute, you were behind guys like Osemi, Kalechi Osemi, and all these other
some Jackson, guys. Rodney Hudson.
Right, yep. So you had some guys in front of you. Explain the dynamic. You wanted to get on the field in the mm-hmm. worst way. Mm-hmm. Those guys were playing, but it doesn't mean you couldn't become friends with those. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the strange dynamic where you'd love to have their job, but you still love and respect mm-hmm. the guys anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely a... So my first year, Gabe and Rodney were there. They were my vets, and I mean, I just went to them and tried to absorb everything I could. And then ended up starting, I think, three games of the last three games of my rookie year. And it was more when they signed Kelechi. It was harder for me to let that go. But when we went through OTAs and I met Kelechi and man, I'm realistic. Mm-hmm. Kelechi is a freaking beast.
Right.
Gabe's a beast. Rodney's a beast. And I just understood that, you know, my time would come, and just to get all the knowledge I could. And, yeah.
Right. John, your second year there, Oakland had a good offensive line. You had a good team mm-hmm. and a playoff appearance. And I always think about mm-hmm. that playoff loss at Houston where Derek Carr would have made a difference, right? I mean, just a terrible way to go into the playoffs without mm-hmm. your quarterback that day.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a good year that year. And, it's kind of similar to what we got going on here right now. Just going through the season, it never felt like it was out of reach for us. Going through the games, no matter what happened, everyone was calm and knew that we would pull out at the end. And I think that's kind of what we got going here. You know, all these games haven't gone our way offensively wise, and we just feel like we just stick to it, stick to the game plan, and just have our playoff caliber mindset, and everything would work out for us.
Murph and I have been sitting here and talking about this offense for a long time, and it's like nine new starters, or maybe eight if DeMarco's on the field. You got all these new guys out there, but we always feel like, and maybe you have the same vibe, or tell us what your vibe is. There's a big engine in this offense. It's ready, and it's just a question of kind of finding the right combination. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's a lot of talent and a lot of potential in this offense. What do you think the key is to, you know, getting that engine to rev a little bit?
Yeah, consistency. Mm-hmm. We got to stop getting false starts, holding. Just we got to keep playing in the green, as Coach likes to say. We mess up too much. Not mess up mentally, just here and there, one guy, one thing. So once we get that engine going and keep it going, I think we'll be all right.
How much can that be attributed to the newness of all the
I guess you can say that, but honestly, this is the tightest-knit team I've ever been around. You know, we offensive linemen were always tight, but around here is different. Everyone's tight. Mm-hmm.
With John Feliciano, Bill's guard, it's funny. You were kind of plugged into the starting unit at training camp. We're down there during the show, and everybody we talked to at camp, even early into the season, whether it was McDermott, Brandon Bean, your teammates, Mitch Morse, we'd say, tell us about John Feliciano. First word out of their mouth, tough. Everybody said it. Remember, we were kind of laughing about it. Why do you think they say that? And what have you done to kind of encourage that aura around you, that people think of you as tough, number one?
Yeah. I mean, I just play a certain way. And, I mean, I don't think about it. I'm not trying to – it's not a conscious decision. It's just what I do. Not trying to be cocky or anything. It's just I only know how to play the game one way, and it's just going.
Do you talk tough, like, during games? Do you
it depends. That Lions game, it got pretty it got pretty chippy. I mean, but I love that. I mean, I love when the D-line want to take the game that way. That's right.
Yeah, you got to be ready. Yeah. Good stuff.
And this O-line, you know, it's funny. It was kind of because of injuries. It was in a state of flux. But you've been kind of the mainstay, right? Mm. You have been there at guard all five games so far. Maybe, you know, stuff happening around you, and you're still there. It's lined up at right guard.
Yeah. That wasn't like that the first 4 years. So trying to do everything in my power to keep on keeping on.
Last question from me. I got in the Tennessee game before the bye, you guys were finishing up. All of a sudden, Mitch goes down, and so does Cody. Mm-hmm. And you got two other – you move into center. You got a whole new right side. You're at center. Spencer's at right guard. And then Batesy's out at right tackle, rookie free agent he traded for. Hadn't been all of a sudden – and then you go out in the four-minute offense. You got to close that thing out. Well, that's a pretty special moment right then when you get three guys playing – different positions than when the game started, and you close it out with a running game in the last 4:22 left, and it's like, you know, let's go, let's get it, close the door, and you did it. That's big.
Yeah, it's credit to Bean and Sean. I mean, they went out and traded for a undrafted rookie.
Yeah. I've
never seen that before.
Yeah.
And thank God we had him, because he went out there and performed, and I mean, Spence is a proven guy playing for the Redskins and the Jets. So he came in, and it's just a credit to the guys that you know, they're ready, and we needed them.
Yeah. Last question for me, John, and you know, just started looking at Dolphins video last night. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find a lot of good things about their start so far, but their rookie first rounder, 13th overall, I think, Christian Wilkins, looks like a pretty good player. I wonder, you'll probably see some of him, if not a lot of him, on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, when you really sit down and look at them as a team, you know, it's easy for outside people to see their record and not understand. I mean, they play real hard. Every game except the first game, they've been in it at halftime, like a close game. So we really have our work cut out for us, and we're going to have to bring our A game, because they're going to come they're going to – they want to get their first win, and they want to – They just play hard. They play hard for their team.
Well, I'm glad you're on the team. I'm glad we finally got you on the show, bro. You can't dodge us anymore.
Yeah, right? Bring me back.
It was pretty pain-free, right?
It wasn't that bad.
All right, okay. It wasn't that bad. That's great.
Thanks, John. Man. Good luck.
All right, thank you.
John Feliciano, Bills offensive lineman. Steve and I coming back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Bills.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.